I want to talk to you about the city census, Alderman Lopez, because when the census data came out, I think a lot of folks were like, oh my gosh, are we going to be the fourth largest city? Is Houston going to overtake us? That didn't happen. City didn't shrink the way they thought it might. So those were, I guess, reassuring. But one of the things that did happen, which I want to ask you about, is that we did learn that the black population in the city dropped by 85,000 residents, and the Latino population grew by quite a bit. So now you sort of got this city council makeup that I'm told is creating a bit of a power struggle. People are not happy with this, the makeup of council right now. What can you tell us?
Well, I know everyone was dancing up and down for joy, saying we're number three. We're number three.
Right.
For about all of 5 minutes. And then they started looking at the demographic stats. And I think, yes, you know, our map system is designed based basically on skin color in the city of Chicago, and that is causing some consternation among black leaders, the black community, that they might lose two, possibly three seats in this remap based on population loss. And I also know that the Latino caucus chairman said that now is the time to make gains because they had a 45,000 person increase. But I don't necessarily believe that one automatically translates into the next, because, yes, I think the black community is going to have to deal with some potential losses. I don't think maybe three. I think maybe you'll see a consolidation of two wards from four to two in their communities. But I think that the Latino caucus also has to recognize the fact that Latinos aren't necessarily just gravitating to one new area and it's going to be homogeneously Latino. Mm-hmm. You know, Latinos by and large disperse into every community, whether it's white, black, you name it, you know, we're everywhere. So that makes it a little more difficult and tricky when you're trying to draw maps based solely on ethnic numbers. Because for Latinos, you won't have that solid block like you might otherwise have for other demographics. I think that creates a great opportunity for those willing to reach for it to create wards that are equally mixed as mine is, mm-hmm. And to rise to the challenge of not having the luxury of just being forced to worry about one ethnic group or another, but having to represent, you know, in a novel way, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you do. It's a great example. Aren't you? Englewood is part of you. Describe your ward there.
Oh, yeah, I go from 67th and Ashland to 41st and Kedzie. Mm-hmm. I represent Back of the Yards, Brighton Park, Gage Park, and West Englewood, a collection of communities that demographically are two out of three are similar. Gage Park is pretty much a mixture of everybody, and West Englewood is still overwhelmingly African-American. But, you know, we have proven that you can coexist and move forward and actually become a rising example of what's possible, even if you don't all look alike. And I think that's maybe what my colleagues need to think about as well, as they start looking at these maps, focusing more on what the law says, which is compact and contiguous, as opposed to these, you know, spaghetti on the wall designs just to try and wrangle in everybody of one particular skin color or ethnic heritage.
Yeah, and so those decisions are, I like what you're saying. I think that does seem like the right way to look at it. But it doesn't seem to look, tension is predicted, and I think that there are absolutely going to be some pretty heated discussions over this. So we'll have to see what
happens. I would hope that as we move forward that we're making maps that are designed to help the neighborhood cohesion and let's allow communities to have a voice. You know, I represent the 15th ward, and parts of the Back of the Yards community were chopped up into six different wards. So it makes it almost impossible to kind of to have a neighborhood plan or to have consistency in terms of policy or direction. And that's not fair to anybody. You know, too often these maps, whether it's on my level, the county, state, or even the federal level, are always designed to protect the incumbent and not necessarily what the needs of the voters or communities are. And so hopefully, you know, this will be the last map that we have to do this. I know there's a big push by League of Women Voters and others to have an independent commission. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully we will plan better for the next map so that 10 years from now we'll have a truly independent community-based map as opposed to one that's just derived by 50 politicians.
Yeah, I would love that. I think we all would. I'm not sure why that hasn't happened yet. I talk about it on the show that it should be done statewide, it should be done citywide, that it should be independent and not drawn. What did you say, a spaghetti? What did you say it again? You put it very well. Spaghetti.
The against the wall design.
There you go. That's it. Because that's what it looks like right now. In fact, at one point, Alderman Lopez, and this is a true story, I was doing like a moms and our babies kind of get together in the park. There were three different aldermen who represented Mary Bartlemy Park at that moment in the West Loop. And I had to go to all three of them to make sure I had the approvals or else we might have gotten shut down, which just seems so whack to me. It just seems so outrageous that that's the way it happens. And yet it is. That's the way it is.
And that has far-reaching implications for a decade.
Sure.
You look at, even when you're talking about, you know, whether it's a stretch of Milwaukee Avenue or Archer Avenue, if you divide that street up into multiple politicians, there will be no cohesive policy towards what kind of housing, what kind of business, what kind of industrial, any of that will all be a hodgepodge collection on what the local alderman wants, the local community wants, and the opportunity for having a cohesive, unified plan, particularly for some of these major corridors, always seems so elusive.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Alderman Lopez, hang on for a second. I want to ask you about police retirements. It's something we talked about on the show yesterday. We found out that on Friday, 40, no less than 40 Chicago police officers retired. There have been a near record, if not a record, number of retirements this year on top of what we saw last year. And we're not graduating nearly that many from the academy. So what gives here? What's going to happen? I want to get your reaction to what's going on in the city with our police officers. Alderman Ray Lopez is with us. Alderman Ray Lopez is here with us. Alderman Lopez, we just found out yesterday that 40 police officers retired on the Friday before. And that adds to a big number. Last year, I think the number was 540 officers retired. We haven't even had 80 graduate from the academy yet. I think by the end of the month or so, there'll be 80 total adding to the force. I know that there have been concerns from some aldermen, from people in your wards asking for that there aren't enough police and concerns about sort of staffing. What would you say about what you're hearing and seeing?
Well, we're definitely seeing the downward trend of our rank and file and their presence in the communities and the neighborhoods. You know, if we do not find a way to stem the exit, we're going to eventually reach that tipping point where no amount of cadets are going to be able to adequately staff the police department for years. And we have to start taking some serious measures to make sure that we are aware of that fact and addressing that fact. What I think that we need to focus on is identifying some of the key reasons why people do not want to work for this department. We do know that rhetoric plays a huge issue, but if there are other factors involved that we can mitigate internally, then we need to start having that conversation. But I think that the department as a whole generally is not doing what it needs to do to address and halt the exodus. In part because they are happy to see the numbers continue to trend downward. I've said before that, you know, though the mayor may not have said she's for defunding the police, there's more than one way to skin a cat, and she is defunding it through attrition. She's causing our numbers to go down to unsustainable levels that we cannot possibly replenish, and she's not allowing the academy to adequately open the gates to train individuals who want to be here in a way that will keep up with the retirements.
Well, I understand. I mean, during the pandemic, you can't exactly fully staff your academy. I think with this number of retirements, you're right, addressing the reasons why and the loss of so many veteran officers is an issue. And then getting qualified, good people to want to do this job is really the future of policing and the future of law and order in the city. So we have to be concerned about both those things. And I just got to say, I was a little surprised on one day to have 40 officers retire, I think is a big deal. I really do.
And it's a trend that is not slowing. And I think that we've seen where some of the decisions of the past who force officers out and take early retirement if they wanted to keep their insurance led to a huge exodus. I think in the last 5 years, we've had over 2,000 officers retire from the force over the last 2 years, of the last 5 years, excuse me. And in that same time, Mayor Emanuel, back when he was still mayor,
did a push where we were hiring and brought another 1,600 officers onto the force to try and mitigate that. But now you have a situation where they are still leaving in droves. We're probably on pace to have a record year of retirements, as well as a record year of low recruitment. And to remind your listeners, we have the city has extended the application period to now be basically a year-round application. That it, you know, in the a decade ago, it happened once every 5 years, and there was a mad rush to get on. And now we're at the point where we could leave the door open year-round, and nobody wants to walk through it. So I think what we need, again, focusing on what we could do to retain those individuals that are there, if there are any incentives that we can look at to try and keep people. I know some officers have brought up residency and other things in the past. You know, maybe there's that it's a time that we start looking at that. Maybe we offer, you know, residency exemptions for senior officers who have 20 plus years on the job if they're willing to stay another 5-10 years to keep them here. Mm-hmm. Whatever we have to do to try and keep people, I think, should be on the table at this point.
Yeah, it is certainly a concerning thing and something worthy of a lot of discussion at a time like this when you're seeing that many people leave the force. Hey, Alderman Lopez, you got anything else going on this week you want to tell us about before I let you go?
You know, I think we have budget coming up in the coming month. We'll be talking more about that. I'm sure you and I will be having plenty of conversations on how much longer the city can continue to deficit spend and borrow and without telling taxpayers what the real cost of government is. But I know this week in particular, all hearts and minds should be on Ella French and her family as they lay her to rest. Tomorrow's the wake, Thursday's the funeral. But also we'll be at the Chicago Police Memorial for Officer Eric Lee, who was gunned down in Englewood several years ago. You know, we cannot forget all of our officers who have given their lives in our neighborhoods. And if anyone would like to join us there, we'll be there tomorrow at noon as well.
Important reminder. Thank you, Alderman. Alderman Lopez, appreciate it.
Anna, take care.
Ray Lopez there. He's the Alderman in the 15th Ward.